This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this program: a right royal visit to a vaccination centre in North London. Dr. Charlotte Benjamin talks about welcoming His Royal Highness Prince Charles to her particular centre. Molly Bernstein, the Development and Communications Manager for Israel, tells us how she and her team are currently on the ground in Eswatini in Africa, trying to make sure the locals there are not neglected when it comes to the vaccination rollout. And Johnny Daniels of From the Depths talks about a remarkable fundraising campaign to buy a 90-year-old Righteous Among the Nations a new place to live. But before all of that, with a look at the Jewish news for this week, I'm joined now by editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Phil.
Hiya, Phil.
Now, the front page this week. Headline reads, Meghan deserves empathy, not hate. Where are you going to kick us off with this, Richard? Have I got something to say about this one?
Right. Okay. Well, I think we probably are going to differ on this one, Phil. Everyone, including you, me and their corgi, have got an opinion on Meghan and Harry since this week's Oprah interview. But it's not just because they are a husband and a wife feeling trapped and isolated. If that was the case, I don't think anybody would care. Certainly not me. I'm certainly no royalist. But I think the issue encompasses a lot of issues that we as a nation have been grappling with, probably since the death of Harry's mum in 1997 and the subsequent decades. Racism, both overt and covert, social media, especially in the last 5 years and its power, media harassment, which of course many blame for Diana's sad demise, gender roles, patriotism, the very future of a silver spoon British monarchy and what it might mean when the Queen dies. All these are wrapped up in this Oprah interview and what Harry and Meghan are going through currently. Look, the aspect I find most intriguing, most troubling, is none of that. What I find most intriguing is the mental health issue here. When someone says, I don't want to be alive anymore, what should our response be? Should it be the response of a decent person and a moral society to say it's a diatribe of bilge? Or would you, as campaigner Johnny Benjamin says in our paper this week, say that anybody who's got the guts to open up about their mental health issues deserves admiration and support and not abuse? You know, I've been umming and ahhing about saying this, Phil, and I'm quite nervous about saying it, but I'm going to. I've only ever told my wife this, not my friends, not my parents, but about 16 years ago in my mid-30s, I had a relationship breakup. I was made redundant. I went through quite a lot of dark months back then. I was prescribed antidepressants. I worked it through with a therapist. I've been mentally well ever since, thankfully, and my life now is in a fabulous place. I pinch myself. Meghan Markle knows one thing that it has taken me literally until now to figure out, and that is speaking about it takes away its power. If people are struggling with dark thoughts and emotions and they feel that they can't speak for fear of being abused by people like Piers Morgan in the way that Meghan Markle has, many, many, many people will be scared into silence and feel that they have got nowhere left to turn. And that, for me, is a terrifying thought.
Well, if I may start by saying bravo for actually having the backbone to talk about it. To anyone who doesn't know, some of my other radio work is very much involved in mental health and well-being on a radio station that focuses solely on that very topic. So for starters, the fact that you've actually sort of felt that you can use the Jewish News Podcast as a platform to actually say that out loud is incredible, and seriously, bravo. As far as Meghan Markle is concerned, I'm going to be quick because there are other stories that we really want to talk about, and I absolutely don't really want to give this any more oxygen than it already has been given. As far as the racism claims are concerned, reports this week suggest that her press team actually sent out a brief stipulating to various media organisations to make sure that they are diverse in terms of the panellists who talk about it, one or two papers even suggesting whether or not this is true or not, stating no old white men, or make sure it's more than just old white men. If that is the case, you do not, I repeat, you do not stipulate against one race for the sake of making sure that others are not spoken out against, if you see what I mean. You can't be anti-racist and then say no old white men, if that is indeed the case. As I say, that's a report in one or two papers. When you say about the mental health side of things, let's make it very, very clear. I completely agree to anybody who says that they are having either suicidal thoughts or they didn't want to be alive anymore. 100% that has to be taken seriously. So seriously. And the fact that so many people for so long now have swept that kind of notion under the carpet is appalling. I don't agree with that at all. But what I don't think is accurate in this instance is that Meghan Markle is one of the biggest advocates for mental health out there at the moment, in terms of the way that she and Prince Harry, and in terms of how William and Kate all talk about it, which is great, brilliant. But they have the connections to some of the biggest mental health charities on the planet, right? So they've got some of the best connections out there. As far as the help is concerned, I don't believe that she doesn't have access to it. I believe that the royals didn't tell her what she wants to hear, and that's probably more where the story lies. So on that front, I struggle a little bit with trying to use mental health as a weapon to make the royal family look bad. I don't like that very much, and I'm not going to apologise for that. And as far as the media harassment is concerned, well, to me, that's very straightforward. If you don't like media harassment, stop inviting it. You don't move to Hollywood for a quiet life. Hollywood is the press capital of the world, for crying out loud. There are paparazzi all over the blithering place. They didn't move there for a quiet life. They moved there because it's where they were going to get the most attention, where they'd have the most control over their finances. And then as far as the media attention in this country is concerned, stop inviting it in. Seriously. You know, you don't say things that are going to provoke people into wanting to read more and to hear more. And that's what I personally think. I think that an awful lot of it's self-inflicted.
But Phil, having said that, it's important, I think, and a lot of people don't seem to be able to do this, to separate what we have to accept and believe were genuine feelings and concerns about her mental health with any broader arguments or problems that one might have with Meghan and Harry, their relationship with the royal family, what they've done before, Meghan's relationship with her father. All this stuff, it needs to be separated from the mental health issue. And for those who seem unable to do that, I think that's where a lot of the fallouts come this week.
I completely agree, but unfortunately, we could probably talk about the whole podcast on this very subject. So let's move on. That's the front page. Let's flick to page two now. And the headline there reads, polarization. Oh, speaking of polarization, polarization risk as Haredim grow.
This is a report from the Institute of Jewish Policy Research, which really is focusing on a number of the long-term factors that could come into play for the community after the coronavirus pandemic is over. One of those issues is the long-term impact of the growing number of Haredim within the community. It's predicted at this point that by the end of this decade, half of British Jews will be born into Haredi families. And as such, the polarization that we've seen during the pandemic as a result of, unfortunately, what's appeared to be disproportionate breaches of restrictions, those factors and those tensions are likely to become even more pronounced in future years. And of course, as the Haredi community grows and becomes more influential, both in terms of policy within the community and Jewish community priorities when it comes to its engagement with the political echelons, that's going to become quite a massive issue for the community.
Yeah, the survey really, it's just a cold, hard look at demographics, really. It's nothing we didn't already know. And the reasons are pretty obvious. You know, the strictly Orthodox community, the Haredi community, everything they do, it's all about tradition, longevity, self-preservation, tradition. While the progressive movements, of which, you know, I was brought up in a progressive movement, reform means to alter, doesn't it? It means to revise, to change, to remake, turn Judaism into something new, something relevant for the modern age. So only one of those strings is ever going to be able to sustain itself fully. We just need to find a compromise, don't we, in the years to come between that old and the new, the tradition and the modernity, and hoping that there is a bridge between the two as those demographics start to shift.
Sadly, I think there are a heck of a lot of bridges to build out there, whether it be in the Jewish community or beyond. But one thing that I hope could build bridges is the story on page 6, Sachs fundraising feat.
This is the latest on our campaign to buy an ambulance, or actually a bloodmobile, for Magen David Adom in Israel in memory of Lord Sachs. Our regular listeners will remember that back in November, within a couple of weeks of Lord Sachs's tragic passing, we decided to honour him with this latest project from the Jewish News, and we teamed up with MDA. A bloodmobile, just for those who don't know, is really an essential part of MDA's armory. More than 80% of blood supplies in the country are achieved through these travelling vehicles going around the country, going to people and collecting blood from donors. At the moment, the 19-strong fleet of bloodmobiles that MDA uses are in a very much in an advanced state of disrepair. And so we're hoping that this will be the first in a new fleet that will travel the country collecting these blood supplies and will in turn save lives. And what could be a better tribute to the legacy and the impact of Lord Sachs than that? We've raised £100,000 already, and we now are just £35,000 away from the total that we need. And hopefully we'll be able to dedicate this ambulance, this bloodmobile, in the summer of this year.
Fantastic. Thank you both very much indeed. In the interest of transparency, I should point out as well, just in case anyone thinks I'm being a little too harsh, I genuinely mean this when I say that as far as the Meghan Markle story is concerned, that if Meghan Markle does indeed need some sort of support and help, I very much hope she gets the support and help she needs. There we are. That's where we have to leave it. And thank you both very much indeed for that. But don't forget that if you are isolating at the moment, you can't leave the house, and you do want to have a look at the Jewish News, you can get your copy as it would be printed in full on the website at jewishnews.co.uk. Editor Richard Ferrer, news editor Justin Cohen, thank you both.
Thanks, Phil.
Cheers, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast, in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, a North London GP welcomed Prince Charles to a pop-up vaccine centre in Staples Corner this week in London as part of the drive to persuade people in ethnic minorities to be vaccinated against COVID-19. I'm delighted to say that vaccine lead for North Central London, Dr. Charlotte Benjamin, joins us now. Dr. Charlotte, first and foremost, I'd say thank you for joining me on the Jewish News Podcast, but actually what I mean to say is thank you for being one of the NHS heroes, because, well, there's no strong enough word. Thank you seems almost too mild, but obviously we do appreciate your time as well. That's quite an exciting week you've had by the sound of it.
It's been terrific this week, so thank you. Really pleased to be here today on the Jewish News Podcast, and really aware of how actually Jewish News, along with other Jewish newspapers, actually bring the community together, sharing the good work that's being done and puts our community in a really good position. So I'm a GP from Hendon. I work for North Central London Commissioning Healthcare Services, and have been, as you said, you know, part of the NHS that's helped deal with COVID. We've had a really difficult time over the last year since COVID struck in all parts, particularly the hospitals and ITU and the rest of the hospitals, but also in general practice, community services, mental health, across the board. And actually, it's a real privilege to work in this, the NHS, working with people who just give and give and give, despite being quite tired and being quite overwhelmed at times. In our practice, we've lost a huge amount of patients due to COVID, about four times the number that we would normally do in particular surge. And these are well-loved patients who've been with the practice often for quite a long time.
Naturally, we're very sorry to hear that. But is it possible to just find out, without wishing to sound too flippant, your title is vaccine lead for North Central London. Now, what does that actually entail? Because one can only assume you're not the one who sits there sending text messages to everyone saying, book your appointment. So what exactly falls at your door? What's your responsibility?
Thanks. So it's strategic lead of the system. So there isn't one part of the system doing vaccine. There are four main parts. So the hugest part is general practice. The primary care, general practice and pharmacies have delivered in North Central London 77% of vaccines. So that's the vast majority of them. Some also have been delivered in hospital hubs, also some in some vaccination centres, but the vast majority in general practice. And it's strategically working out which patients get asked to go to which centres, working out how we assure that the centres are safe, they're running smoothly, helping in the setup. So across North Central London, I did assurance visits for the different hubs, making sure that they're safe. It's a new world with COVID. We're doing a huge service where we're actually need to ensure that we've got the infection prevention control right, that we've got the safety right for patients. We, in the beginning of the programme, we had the elderly who, the 80s plus, majority of whom hadn't actually been out for over 9 months, coming suddenly to a place. We had to ensure that actually they were safe and that we were protecting them. So there's the safety, there's the governance, and there's the strategic decisions about where things get done. And it's a national programme, so it's the cohorts and the way we vaccinate is set nationally, but then the way we deliver that locally to make sure we get through to the most vulnerable first is really, really key. I also do a bit of vaccinating myself. So often on a Sunday, I'll go down to my local centre and vaccinate, and it's hugely rewarding.
Now, what's the uptake been like? Because all we're hearing at the moment, it seems to be left, right and centre, is reports saying that those from ethnic backgrounds are just not taking up the offer of the vaccination as and when they get it. Is that your experience? And if so, why do you think that is?
So it's a mixed picture. Majority of people, a lot of people are taking it up and very excited and really pleased and thrilled that the Jewish community has been at the forefront, that really keen to have vaccinations. So in North Central London, we cover Barnet, Enfield, Haringey, Camden, Islington. The Jewish population, including Haredi population, has actually taken the vaccine up very highly. We know out of that area, say Stamford Hill is one of the areas, and some of the areas in Manchester and Salford, there is a bit more vaccine hesitancy, where people say, we're not so sure about it, we're going to wait and see. That's also the same locally in our area for the BAME Black and Asian minority ethnic communities. And we're aware from the data, particularly, that there is a reduced uptake in the Black and ethnic minority communities. So this led us to look at working at doing how we could encourage. And the work isn't just the pop-ups. We've also done voluntary sector working within GP surgeries, calling patients, GPs calling and calling again, and working doing webinars and podcasts and going on Somali radio station and Turkish radio station, really trying to promote to the communities where there is much less uptake. What's actually very interesting and actually quite sad is that often the most vaccine hesitancy is in the groups that have been affected really heavily by COVID. So we know that COVID actually differentiated in terms of it affected people from areas of deprivation, areas where people, English is a second language. We're in BAME communities as well. And these are the communities that really need to have really high uptake in order to protect themselves. So the pop-up, the one we did on Sunday, we done before in Hendon Mosque, we'd done before previously in the Evangelical Church near Brent Cross, was an opportunity to be in a setting where that was different from the health setting. And actually, I did some of the vaccinations and I said to people, you know, what made you come here? And the experience was, well, actually, I did get a letter from the health service and from my GP, and I thought, I'm not sure, maybe I'll do it in a while. And then the opportunity came through the church, and they thought, well, actually, that's a huge endorsement. And actually, this morning, I spoke to one of the Stamford Hill GPs who said a very similar thing. There was there've been a couple of sessions in Stamford Hill done by the GP Federation, Hatzola, which have been hugely successful. And where there's vaccine hesitancy in the Haredi community in Stamford Hill have said, I'm not sure I will do. These are great events to help encourage. And everyone we vaccinate, we say, tell your friends, tell your family that you're doing it. Actually, and that helps.
Fantastic. Now, I know that His Royal Highness Prince Charles paid you a visit to the pop-up vaccine centre. Tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you. So that was hugely exciting that we had a royal endorsement of our pop-up site. So Prince Charles came on Tuesday morning and there was huge media interest. He came to see the site. He was interested in the vaccination programme as a whole, and then also particularly interested in how we're reaching out to communities in our area who are taking up less of the vaccine. What was incredible is that he spoke to every patient there waiting and in the middle of getting vaccines. He spoke to all the volunteers and the vaccinators, and people were hugely touched by the amount of time he spent with them to actually, you know, people are working incredibly hard. Most people are volunteering, most people in health and are volunteering in, you know, weekends, in days off, actually doing this over and above the work that they do. And it was a huge boost to actually have the Royal Seal of Approval. So it went down really well. And it was the endorsement that actually vaccines save lives. This is key now. There is still a lot of COVID around. This is part of the solution of getting back to normal. But the vaccines protect from hospitalization and from death. And they are very, very safe. And it's hugely important to do it. And it's a privilege to be involved in the program.
And frankly, it's a privilege to have you involved in this program. Dr. Charlotte Benjamin, the vaccine lead for North Central London, thank you very much indeed for everything you do and for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, speaking of worldwide, one of the things that I'm finding immeasurably frustrating about the pandemic is the fact that I, unfortunately, am not allowed to record in a studio for the moment and actually see my guests face to face. However, even if I was allowed in the studio, that wouldn't necessarily help with the next guest here on the Jewish News Podcast, because Molly Bernstein, who is the Development and Communications Manager for Israaid, happens to be in the middle of Africa at the moment, because Israaid are working on a rather splendid mission to try and help vaccinate parts of Africa in a bid to try and destroy or defeat the COVID pandemic. And I am so pleased to say that Molly joins us now on the Jewish News Podcast. Molly, first and foremost, welcome and thank you for taking time out of what I can only assume is a very busy schedule. And bravo to you and to Israaid. This sounds fantastic.
Why, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show today.
Now, tell us, just for those who I very much hope that there is the case that not many people don't know what Israaid do, but just in case they haven't heard, perhaps you'd be so good as to tell us a little bit about Israaid.
No problem. So Israaid is an Israel-based humanitarian aid agency. We work all over the world with communities affected by disaster. So that sort of falls under a couple of categories. One is displacement situations. So refugee crises, for example, in Greece, in Colombia, and in South Sudan here, relatively nearby. And we also work in areas affected by what we often call natural disasters, so earthquakes, hurricanes, et cetera, et cetera. And over this past year, we've also really had to ramp up our ability to respond to a new kind of disaster, which we all now know as the pandemic. And we've been responding on every single continent to support communities as they deal with the both direct and indirect consequences of COVID-19. So right now I'm in Eswatini, where we're working on supporting the local infrastructure in terms of its response to its ability to roll out the vaccination program. But all over the world, we've been providing services for communities affected by COVID, whether it's looking at increasing rates of gender-based violence, whether it's looking at how we can ensure that children still have access to education, even if they can't physically be in school, or whether it's ensuring that communities have access to safe water to wash their hands, have masks, have all of these types of, you know, life-saving and preventive measures that keep us safe.
Now, how well prepared, for want of a better term, were the people of Eswatini or in Swaziland, which is the area which you're in at the moment? Because we kind of take for granted now, 1 year on pretty much for this country in the UK since COVID first struck our shores. I think Israel was slightly ahead of us. So we saw Israel start to shut down a little earlier on, about a year ago and a bit. And yet we now have come to learn that masks are very much the way forward. We can't go into public spaces. We have to think twice before we go somewhere. We're forever washing our hands. All of these things now that we sort of take for granted are part of our everyday life. How prepared was Eswatini when Israaid got there? Or was it a bit like starting from scratch again?
We've only been here for this week. So I can't sort of speak to directly how it was, you know, way back when in March, when we remember that that our lives changed. But what I can tell you is that, one, people here are really, really cognizant of social distancing, of mask wearing, of hand washing. I'd venture to say that probably they're better than most situations I've been in at home. And so that's definitely impressive. The country itself, the first wave in last spring wasn't too intense, but they, over the last 2 months, starting in December, faced a very, very difficult second wave, which claimed the lives of over 600 people. And we're talking about a population here of about 1 million. So that's a pretty significant number, including the prime minister who passed away from COVID. And on the ground here, more than 17,000 people have been infected by COVID or reported affected by COVID, including the king here. So it's definitely been an intense period for the people of Eswatini. And now sort of sorting out what the next step is in terms of vaccination is you know, the way forward and you know, sort of thinking about what can be next.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that vaccination, because that's very much part and parcel of why Israel have set up a pitch there, as it were. Now, I don't think that even the harshest of critics will deny that Israel has absolutely wiped the floor as far as the vaccine rollout is concerned. What a phenomenal job Israel has done on that front. Is that something you're hoping to replicate in Eswatini, or is it going to be a little more complicated than just setting up a load of pop-up vaccine centres and hoping people will sort of come through the doors?
So, I mean, definitely we're here to bring our expertise and our experience from Israel. And that definitely helps to, you know, we have very hands-on experience in this. And that is a meaningful case study, both from the challenges and the successes in Israel, right? It's like when we're talking about the issues around miscommunication or around people not understanding the difference between the different vaccines and what the implications of those different pieces are, that existed in Israel too, right? It still exists in Israel. It exists everywhere. It's a matter of, you know, sharing the lessons learned, both the challenges and the successes, with the local communities here to make sure that we're really able to leverage that as positively as possible. And we're working very closely here with the Ministry of Health and the Kirsch Foundation, it's just the foundation of Nati Kirsch, who's a citizen of Eswatini. And they are the two organizations that invited us here to support. So we're really focused on sort of bringing the challenges and the successes from Israel and trying to create the best outcome possible here on the ground.
Molly, the work that you and Israel do is phenomenal at the best of times, never mind in the middle of a pandemic. Thank you so much for doing what you do, for making the world that little bit a better place, and best of luck with whatever the challenges lie ahead for as long as you are in Eswatini and Swaziland in Africa. Thank you very much for speaking to us as well on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you for having me. Have a lovely day.
Molly Bernstein, Development and Communications Manager, currently in Eswatini as part of IsraAid's vaccine rollout mission there. This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, a fundraising campaign has been launched to buy a flat for a 90-year-old woman who saved Jews during the Holocaust after a charity discovered the squalor she's living in. The charity is called From the Depths. The founder is our next guest, Johnny Daniels, who joins us now. I should warn you before we get into this interview that some of the descriptions that you're about to hear may cause distress, so listener discretion is advised. Johnny, first and foremost, thank you for joining us on the Jewish News Podcast. Perhaps I don't really want to assume that people know what From the Depths do, so would you be so kind as to tell us a little bit about your marvelous organization?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. From the Depths was created with the idea of a younger generation getting involved in Holocaust Memory Memorial. We're millennials. I'm 35 years old, and everybody volunteering and working with us is around that age, if not considerably younger. With the focus of really taking this difficult and problematic past for all of us, especially for the Jewish people, and educating a broader audience and a younger audience as well when it comes to the issues of Holocaust Memory Memorial. And what we've seen when working, telling the stories of the righteous amongst the nations, these incredibly brave non-Jews who often risk their lives to save our Jewish brothers and sisters, what we've seen over the last few years, and especially over COVID, is the difficult situation that they found themselves in. You know, these are people in their 90s, even up to 100 years old, 101, the oldest that we're helping. And these are people who just going outside right now is difficult and dangerous for them with COVID. So we changed a little focus of our work in the foundation during COVID to personally go and visit them, to take them food, PPE, masks, gloves, sanitizers, all they need to help keep them safe during this difficult time, and just to be there for them and also to share their stories. And remarkably, there's only 195 righteous monks and nations living in the entire world. And I'm very happy to say that I've personally visited the vast majority of them during COVID with these things to help them. And what we came across just a few days ago in Belarus was completely shocking for us.
Belarus is where you are at the moment, is that right?
Yeah, I've actually stopped my car in a tiny village called Lenin in the heart of Belarus. We're here in Baranovichi. We visited two righteous yesterday. In Lenin, we're actually telling a story of an entire Jewish community that was wiped out. All of this people can see and follow on our Facebook page. But what happened last week was a very shocking experience. You know, I thought I'd seen it all. I'd visited righteous living in pretty poor conditions, people who were very, very poor and you know, barely had enough. But last week, sadly, in this tiny, tiny village called Glusk, next to a city called Bobruisk, which is potentially well known as a former Jewish city, in this tiny village of Bobruisk lives a remarkable lady by the name of Ludmila Volchek. She is 90 years old, and the story of how she rescued this little Jewish girl is just remarkable. You know, the Jews in the city of Glusk were all marched to a mass grave and basically stripped naked and shot one after another. As the Jews were being shot into this pit, a little girl, an 11-year-old Jewish girl by the name of Olga Shulman, fell just before she was hit by a bullet. Her entire family and the rest of the village almost fell on top of her, blood pouring all over this little girl, and she crawled out this grave. And she stayed in the forest for 2 days, not knowing where to go, until she came across this incredible Belarusian family who decided to take her in. And for 3 years, she lived with this family. The daughter, who was her age, went with her often, hid with her, took her to her different hiding places to make sure that she was hidden. And multiple times, the Germans were coming, even to this tiny village, to hunt them down. And this lady truly risked her life. And I went to her house expecting just to visit her, just to say thank you with the regular packages that we bring. But what I saw shocked me to my bones. This hero was living in abject poverty. I mean, I'd never seen anything like it. She barely has running water in her home. She doesn't have a toilet in her home. She has an outhouse. She's 90 years old. It's minus 20 outside. It's freezing even right now. She can't go outside. So she's stuck to live in this freezing cold house because she can't chop firewood to put it in the, you know, in the boiler to heat her house.
So this sounds horrifically sad and ghastly, but if I know you, I'm guessing that you are planning on doing something about it. So what are From the Depths trying to achieve?
Yeah, well, we're going to be doing this. It was very clear that something needs to be done urgently to help her. So what we did is we started this crowdfunding campaign that, again, can be found on our Facebook page and all the other places, and an article shared by the Jewish News recently as well, which we're very grateful. And we're going to be buying her a flat. It sounds like an incredibly big thing to do, but here in Belarus, it's not incredibly expensive. It's much cheaper than one would imagine. So we're going to be buying her an apartment, actually in Bobruisk, in the city nearby. We're partnering with the local Jewish community. The apartment's just across the road from the synagogue, which gives her this incredible opportunity to be a part of a community. The local rabbi from Chabad will be visiting her every day to bring her to all the Jewish events and really taking care of her as a part of this community. And so, you know, it's an opportunity to take this hero and give her what will sadly be her last few years as, you know, in the most comfortable and dignified manner possible, which she absolutely deserves.
Now, if people want to get involved in this particular campaign and would like to find out more and, who knows, possibly even help it in whichever way they can, where do they go and what do they need to do?
Once again, on our Facebook page, which, you know, is easily searchable, From the Depths, or our website, www.fromthedepths.org. And really, it's amazing. We've seen over the first 24 hours, we've hit a few thousand pounds already in small online donations from people donating $5 to $100. And it's these kind of donations that I really like. The big donations are great, but it's the fact that all of us are getting involved here. And it's people giving even a little bit. Because truly, these little bits all come together to show our appreciation for this remarkable woman. And boy, does she deserve it.
And frankly, you are a remarkable human being as well. So Johnny Daniels, founder of From the Depths, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
And that's it. Thank you very much indeed for listening to this episode of the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. And for more information, you can go to gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests, Dr. Charlotte Benjamin, Molly Bernstein, and Johnny Daniels. Of course, we say thank you to our pay-per-view team, editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. Oh, and we must also say thank you to Justin Cohen for producing this episode. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application. That way you'll hear any previous episode or be informed when new ones become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. And if you'd like to comment, well, then we'd love to hear from you. All you have to do is email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.